All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this month's Exchange Essay Chat. It's August 2017, and we're going to talk about mentorship and meaningful professional relationships. I apologize for the technical difficulties tonight. I assure you that this will not happen again in the future. We've just been using a different carrier, and it's just not working out anymore. So, but we're very, very excited. I'm joined here by Jesse Ellis. He's an incredible mentor, a personal mentor of mine. He's a physical therapist now in Portland, Oregon, doctor of physical therapy, OCS, SCS, fellow of orthopedic manual therapy, and newly director of player health and performance for the Portland Trailblazers. So I am very excited to have him here and very excited to have this conversation on mentorship. Jesse, thank you for your time. Really, really, really appreciate you being here, man. And I apologize again. I'll apologize to you as well for all of the technical difficulties. And thanks for sticking around with me, man.
It's no problem. I feel it's like the scene from Zoolander when they're trying to get the files out of the computer. Literally trying to open up the computer and break it down. I felt like that was me and you trying to get this going.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, seriously. That's what it feels like. Jess, for all of our viewers. Oh, go ahead, man.
I was just going to say, I'm also going to blame that it's the day before the eclipse. So there has to be something going on with that.
Yes, that's so true. Everyone's losing their minds, seriously. So for all of our viewers that don't know you, can you please give a more extended introduction?
Yeah. So born and raised in the great state of North Dakota, southwest portion of the state, a little town called Dickinson. So I went to school at University of North Dakota. So I graduated in 2009. I was tired of the cold, and I wanted to strategically put myself in a location where I could possibly work with athletes. So I knew Phoenix was an area where there was four major sports. There was sprint training baseball. There was a lot of golf. So I felt like with somebody that had no network at all in sports, I felt like I had to improve my odds. So I traveled down there right after graduation, and I got married. From there, basically have been in and out doing multiple different jobs. So private practice or the private sector for about 4 years. And I'll go into more of that detail, because that's where I found my mentor. After that, I went out to China. So I did some work with those, which was formerly known as Athletes Performance, and worked in Shanghai to basically a blend of performance and PT for the national teams and basically in preparation to the Olympic Games. So I was a trader. I apologize. I helped the Chinese out. after that, I did a little bout in tennis. So I was a concierge physical therapist. I was with two different tennis players, traveled the world, got to do all the cool stuff that tennis can bring. Again, I was a blend between a performance coach and a PT. And then I landed at Exos, which was one of the goals of mine when I moved down to Phoenix, was there. And I was the director of PT for 2 years. That's where I met Cruz. That's where he's kicking butt right now. I'm sad to go, but I'm currently 2 weeks into my new position as director of player performance and health for the Trailblazers. Go Rizzy. living in this hotel for 30 days. I purchased a house yesterday, so things are moving very quickly. My wife is expecting, she's week 19, so it'll be our first child. Just 180 right now.
Wow, man. Yeah, that's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in your life right now, and all the stress that I brought you tonight, that's just another thing piling on your plate. So thank you for that.
This is easy. I get to talk about mentorship, my favorite topic. So
yeah.
This is nothing.
Awesome. So really quick before we get started, I want to let everyone know. So for the past few months, we've been using Facebook primarily, and now we're using the Google Hangout option, which we've done before in the past. But for those of you that are joining that have never used the Google Hangout option, we still want to hear your questions. So please post all of your questions. You can post them on Facebook, on the APTA Student Assembly. You can also post them in Facebook, in the events, if you use those to use this as a reminder. And you can also post them on Twitter using the hashtag ExchangeSA. So please get those posted, and we'll get started. Jesse is a wealth of knowledge, so we have him for about an hour or so. He's been gracious enough to give us a little bit of time.
So more minutes. I'll give you 15 more minutes based on 15. The technical stuff.
15. All right. Sounds good, man. It's going to be a great 15 then. The reason, and then just a little background. So the reason I asked Jesse to come on the chat this month is this chat is going to hit super close to home. So what you're going to see tonight is a really living, breathing mentorship relationship right now between Jess and I. So we've worked together for the past few months, and I still talk to him regularly about a bunch of different clinical concepts, personal concepts, professional concepts, everything, few and far, everything in between there. But I really thought to myself, you know, with this topic of mentorship is, you know, why not just show you what the real mentorship situation looks like. So if you have questions for either Jesse or I, you can shoot them at us. So please do. So with that, I get to ask the first question tonight. You ready for this, Jess?
I feel my heart's a little, my seat's getting a little hot. So let's do this. Come on.
It's hot, brother. It's hot, brother. You're about to bring the fire. Here we go. So first question, man, I'm really curious if you have a mentor in your life, how you found that mentor, and now that you're moving, you're in a different position in your life, you know, what does your mentorship situation look like? It's a two-part question.
Great question. So when I was in school, I went to class that day, fell asleep, or I just completely wasn't even told about this, but mentorship was nothing on my radar. So when I was out of school, things were compensation with, and then how much money am I going to get for education? And that was kind of basically on my radar. I didn't really truly seek out anybody. Fall, because truly I can scratch 2 years of my career as just garbage. So when I first started, I was in a very high volume clinic. Seeing, you know, I left school very energized. I was top of my class. I was going to change the world to a heavy volume clinic where I had too many distractions. And I was it was a sink or swim situation. What happened was 2 years out, I was completely burnt out. And to the point where I was actually looking at different professions. So I was going to go back to med school.
Wow.
Basically looking for a bigger title and a bigger position. So I was seeking that out. And I kind of had a discussion myself, but then I reached out to a colleague who had graduated with me. He was going through a fellowship. So I hadn't known what the fellowship was. But he basically said, you know, slow your roll, hit the brakes. You're a good PT, stay within what you know, somebody. So there was a gentleman named Tim Farron, who is a good friend of mine, so lucky enough to be a business owner with his company, and an all-around guru. He doesn't want to be called a guru. He is a master.
That's right.
I wrote up elaborate emails saying, Dr. Farron, I really, you know, ecstatic for one day, and I gave this really long paragraph showing all the respect in the world for somebody he didn't know, and he replied with the letter Y as in just yes, because it was too much to do anymore, and he gave me a list of times to come. So I already know going in there saying I don't know what I'm getting myself into. So I walk into his clinic, and he has this focus. He has this look, present, and he's looking at you. He's measuring you. You start to sweat. You get a little nervous. This guy very much. But we watch this patient. So I'm sitting in the room watching. This woman is a middle-aged, I don't know, she's probably in the later phases of an adhesive capsulitis, her shoulder. And I watched him treat her. And what he had done was, I wouldn't even call it PNF because there was any PNF PT would just cringe at the form, but that was not his goal. It was a manual resisted exercise to completely fatigue both the neurological and muscular system. He did this with so much vigor that I would never have done that. And after he completely fatigued the system, he did 2 or 3 long lever manips. She was awake. She cussed a little bit. And the whole time I'm wondering, I have 2 questions, and I might have had a few cuss words in there too, but I go, who the hell is this? And then my follow-up question was, who the hell lets them do that to them? So it that second question blew my mind, and that was that person put their full trust in this person. This guy's credible. He got the trust. He got the rapport. He knew the goal that he needed to make. And what happened was she sat up, and the results that she had in one session was probably 2 months of me doing very passive, low-key exercises, not wanting to, you know, create too much pain and an extensive home program that wouldn't have amounted to anything. I'm not wanting anybody to just do a bunch of long lever nips, but Tim was a master, and he could see what he had to do to get to that point. And that person trusted him. So after that session, I just said, Tim, I want to hang out with you. That I am working because this is a PT. This is a different type of practice than I've ever seen. So I stopped all my research on med school. I decided to go into a fellowship, did 3 years through the Evidence in Motion Fellowship, which is a great fellowship and great people. Julie Whitman, to name a few, and you know, Jeff Moore and a few of those guys are through that pedigree. Yeah. So that's where it's at. Mind was blown, saw something I'd never seen before. And the fact is, when you meet Tim, it's not so much about how good he is as a technical PT. He's very good with his manual therapy. It is the commitment that he has with the patient, the communication. It's much more on that point of view that I learned from him. So that being said, now I'm in Portland. I'm on my own little island. So I've had networking meetings with a few different PTs in the city already, so I'm being active there. I have Tim on speed dial if I ever need him.
Yeah.
But with mentorship, there is a point where you phase out as becoming, you will always be a mentee in some regard, but there will be a point where you almost become a journeyman. So just like an apprenticeship, a journeyman is somebody that's gone through the whips and the damage and all of the learning process to get to a point where they're independent, and then they can choose to understand and to learn from that point. Because they have a foundation and a framework. So I always have them on speed dial. And that's my story about Tim.
Wow, man. Wow. That's all I can say. It's actually super crazy that you tell that story, you know, that long elaborate email and that, you know, he replied with just a why. It almost reminds me of you know, I don't know if you remember when I first met you at the Arizona Student Conclave, and I approached you pretty similar, and I was really persistent, almost like a pest that night, you know, just annoying, trying to talk to you a bunch, because I don't know if you remember. So you gave your lecture, and then I went up afterwards, and I bothered you for like about 15 minutes. You know, we had a conversation, and then afterwards you went to the PT pub night where I just hung around, tried to like squeeze my way in the circle where you were at and just get around you. But yeah, man, it's that seems like exactly what it's like. You know, you just keep trying, keep persistent, keep pushing to, do whatever you can to be around that mentor of yours. So incredible story, man. Thank you for sharing.
I thought you were just trying to get a free beer out of me that night. So that was something more professional.
That didn't happen. That didn't happen. All right. So Jenny is our first question. She has a couple, actually. So Jenny asks, what are the key ingredients in a successful mentee-mentor relationship? And when do clinicians typically mentor? Is it during lunch? Is it between patients? Is it after hours? I can ask you those if you need them.
So I think the first answer is very simple. It's effort. You don't have to be the smartest person, but effort counts. I've had interns, I've had fellows, I've had residents that follow me. If you do not extend the effort my way, it's an equal battle. I'm only going to give you as much as you give me. So I've had students that work really, really hard, and they don't get it. It's not natural. But I give them everything I got because they're doing the same. And there's some that are very talented and almost feel like they get it. And that's, again, it's a shortfall on them, not just on the mentee-mentor relationship, on just a career mindset. Always have to keep yourself in check. Always continuing to want to learn. And if you feel comfortable, it's because you may be only learning within your framework of a nice packaged box that feels good and warm inside, and you don't extend yourself out. And that is where innovation lives. So I think that's one, is just effort. The other is, especially once you find a mentor that you're committed in, and you will find that. You will meet people, and you may respect them and their skill, but there is a different sense that you walk in like a Tim when it was like, oh, I am in a totally different situation right now comparative to any other hand that I've shaken in this profession. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how many credentials you have behind your name. It could just be PT. What I'm getting at, there is a presence that you feel. And once you feel that commitment, you need to drop. You need to check your ego. There is a sense of inferior that you need to have. And the reason why I say that is with children, they learn so much quicker than adults. And that's A, biologically things are developing quicker. But two, they're looking at the adult as a superior. And they're fully committed in that person. As an adult, we measure each other up. We have biases. We have challenging, which is fine. But if you truly want to learn a new concept, you become a child. And you learn. And you just absorb and check your ego. So that's a big thing, is effort and just not having anything that restricts your learning process. And then second question is when does that happen? The answer that is so commonly found in PT is it depends. on your situation, is your mentor in your work setting? If so, I would try to carve out some time. Maybe it's at the end of the day. Maybe it's at lunch. But the key is this. It needs to be quality time. You can't learn somebody on their computer finishing up a note. So if it's 15 minutes, but it's a good 15 minutes, perfect. Mentee needs to be prepared to also be efficient. Because usually the mentor is somebody that's established and has a lot of stuff on their plate, either patients, ownership of a business, academia, something like that. So there's a lot of stuff going on. The mentee has to be very, very efficient with what they want to learn and bring it to the table with questions. Almost like as a boss, when people talk to me and say, hey, there's an issue, I always ask for a resolution. What should we do about this? Instead of just bringing up a problem, there has to be something to improve it. So that's kind of where it stands. When it comes to mentorship, that's kind of a sexy new theme. Again, I didn't know about this 8 years ago, but I might be an idiot. I'm not sure. But the thing is a lot of companies will say, we have mentors. We have a board-certified orthopedic or sports or something like that. And they really try to push that and market that position, but truly, a lot of times you don't have mentorship. And that's when you are applying for a job, you need to go in there. You need to make sure that your philosophies line up with that mentor. And then two, is it realistically going to happen? Or are they seeing 25 patients and they want to get the hell out of the clinic after their volume is done? So that's kind of where that comes from. So
yeah. Dude, I love the first comment that you said. You have to almost copy them. And I remember doing this with you, and I see, you know, taking classes with Tim with Phoenix Manual Therapy. I see a lot of similar attributes between you and him. You guys almost move similar. You do mobilization similar. There's a lot of things that are similar, even in the way you two speak. There's similarities. So it's like you said, you almost become a child. You literally copy them. And then as you grow, you start to make that your own. You start to figure out, you know, new and different ways to do it. But yeah, that's so key. And then to your second point, I really like that you talked about a mentor is oftentimes someone that's pretty established. So I think one way for students or even young clinicians to bring value to mentors' life is with our time, right? So I think one way is like, how can I make my mentor, or, you know, even if it's my boss or whoever it is, how can I free things up for them so that in turn they may be able to impart a little bit of knowledge at the end of the day or whatever it is. So love those two things that you said, man. That was great. Anything to follow up, or you ready for the next question?
I would say one thing is just that last comment about whatever you can provide to help that mentor out. That goes more than just mentorship. Networking, if that's your goal to get into an industry that you want and you have nothing on your resume, you have effort and you have time on your hands. So that might be another way to get your foot in the door, whichever professional goals that you have.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. Next question. Let's see. So Samantha Ann, so I don't know if you remember Sammy. She came to Shadow at Exo. So, all right. So Sammy asks, how do you go about asking someone to be your mentor? Do you ask, or does it happen naturally? That's the first question. She has another one after that.
Okay, that is a good question. you know, again, there's different options. I think authentic mentorship also is married with apprenticeship. Apprenticeship basically means to grasp with hand. So mentorship, you can work on clinical reasoning and framework. Apprenticeship is usually, you know, looked down upon because it's a trade or something that might not be academia or going to college, but that's where you get the hands-on. And that's where you get the specificity and the hand slap when you do something wrong. So there is a marriage between the two. So where I'm going at with this is some mentorship can be virtual. Some mentorship you can go on a computer and talk to somebody, which might be helpful. The other is some mentorship costs money. That's fine because a lot of times people don't have time to do that. And money, time is money. So that being said, I only warn you as this, you get as much as you pay. When you pay for service, you get that. When it's true, authentic mentorship, that's a different ballgame. That is an investment. You want that mentee to be an extension from you and make a difference. And all of my mentees I you know, work with, and they go off and do great things, is you better be better than me. Because I've given you all I have, and I've given you all my tools. And if you don't, shame on you. But also, I'm not laying down. I'm getting better every day, too. So it's going to be a battle. But there's an expectation whenever a mentee goes off and does their thing, I wish them the best, and I expect huge things. Yeah. So to answer it, sorry, I got off track. So virtually, you could possibly talk to somebody, or you could pay, and then it's just, Sometimes the mentor looks at somebody and says, that person's special and I will invest my time and get them to a point where I'd like to see them. So again, it depends. You got to find the right person. Some people don't care about mentorship. So you got to really find people that are internally driven by making a change in the profession. Yeah. And many times they don't care, of course. Now, are they going to come to your facility, Sammy? No, they're not going to do that. But you come to them, that's no sweat off their back. I mean, they're working. So the only thing I would say is there are times when if that person has an intern or already somebody like a fellow in training, a lot of times you want to respect that and say, well, I only have a certain amount of time and I'm invested in this person too. So I can't overextend myself. So I would only warrant that if you're going to do it, try to have it one-on-one and not take away from somebody else that's trying to learn.
Ah, that's interesting, man. I've never heard that. But to your other point where you described, a really, really effective mentor is giving, you know, all of their skills probably at a sooner point than they had it, better than they had it. And, you know, obviously has their network to work with. So really pouring into that that mentee is interesting. I like the way you worded that. Okay, so here's the second question from Sammy. So what qualities should students and young professionals look for in a mentor? And what qualities do mentors look for in potential mentees?
Okay, well, I think that's a good question. So there's a few. One, I've already mentioned it, is commitment and effort. You want to see that with that that mentor, whoever you work with. The other thing is you're going to want to see some purpose. To see some purpose, to understand that they are so indebted into their craft and that this is their passion and this is what they love to do. That's a different type of person. They are not the ones that are talking to their patients and asking about how their weekend was. Mm. That's not the guy that's got a coffee cup in one hand and doing a piriformis release. It's just not like that. There is a constant focus when that person's there. And then the way that they speak, there has to be some credibility. They have to be an active listener. They have to show compassion. So, I mean, all these things would make sense. But just like when Tim, when I met him, his eyes latched on. He was focused and he knew, you know, this conversation was meant to do something. And he was basically testing me and seeing if I was worth his time. So yeah. Let's flip it around. So what would bring that type of quality? You gotta not have an ego. You got to do what you have to do to help this person out. Effort's more important than talent. So, just being aware of how you tick psychologically. There's tools that I'm going to show you. I got some books that I'm going to recommend at the end of the night where, you know what, these are some really good tools to understand how you work. And once you know how you are, then you know how to interact and work with a mentor.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. So I'm curious, just like a follow-up on that, is a mentor someone that's looking for someone to be really similar to them? I mean, are we trying to avoid groupthink or are we looking for someone that maybe is a nice complementary type of personality or skill set or anything else that you can think about with that?
That's a great question. So a true mentor does not want to replicate. Because the thing is, mentorship is this. You just want to make a change in the profession, and you don't want to create clones, because what you're doing is that's narcissism. That's you trying to create a bunch of you. And you also are trying to create a cult. That's not what you want. You want to have the highest regard of respect, but you want to make sure that they are very independent thinkers. They have the framework at least. So at least create a framework and promote innovation and to be critical. Be critical on the newest stuff. If it's evidence, if it's the newest courses that come out that, you know, you're just not fully invested in that because it's new and it's sexy. So I think that you got to be aware of that. So great question. But, yeah, we don't want to replicate a bunch of the one version. So,
yeah. Awesome. Good stuff, man. All right, let's there's a few more questions here, so I want to get to these. So, all right, Jillian McLean asks, what are a couple ways students can make themselves stand out while searching for the right mentor?
Okay, so I would say there's some tough questions. I would say that if you have, you look for their network, right? You look to see who they hang with. So then you have at least some connection and you can talk about so-and-so or just try to gravitate towards maybe a group of like-minded clinicians. So that's a big thing. You know, I'm not saying that you have to go and do a bunch of continuing education courses, but if you want to meet somebody or work with somebody, even an introductory email and ask about where their philosophy lives and what do they kind of, how they practice so that you can kind of fine tune and figure out what their terminology and how they speak and how they kind of think will allow you to connect with that mentor a little bit more.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you kind of hang with the right network and you try to at least dive into some of the information that they're, you know, they latch onto when they come to clinical practice.
Yeah, dude, I think for me, when I was trying to get your attention, I think I did whatever I could really, to find a way to just, I don't know, this maybe it was a poor way to say it, but just kind of be around you and your group, you know? So whatever it was that I needed to do, I was kind of making that available. And I think also one thing that's really interesting is if someone gives you time or someone gives you whatever it is that you're looking for in that relationship, be prepared to take their advice. Yeah. Like when you, when I was kind of going through the end of my internship with you and I was getting ready to graduate and you gave me advice on my career option, I really did exactly what you said, you know? So that's exactly, I mean, whatever advice that you gave me, obviously you're doing it out of what you think is the right move. Like, hey, if you were in my position, what would you do? So I guess to Jillian, Jess, I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. But to Jillian, whatever it is, one, that whatever way you can put yourself and get yourself closer to that individual and kind of maybe get their attention. And then two, when they do kind of throw you a bone as some poor words, I mean, take it and do whatever you can with it and be ready to deliver on whatever promises you gave and anything else that you said. And then obviously take their advice when they give you advice.
Yeah.
Jess, any other thoughts there?
Yeah, I would say that is so important is if you have an opportunity, you got to pounce on it. I mean, that's the number one thing. You don't know how many times that you have an opportunity. So take everyone that you get, especially when you know nothing and you have right out of school. You got to take the sacrifices and that's where, yeah, exactly. And that's where
that's me, man. That's me.
Hey, I've sacrificed a lot. People go, how the hell do you get to this point? Sacrifice. And not just myself, but my wife. She's been totally invested in me. She's had to make a lot of sacrifices for me to get to where I'm at. So not just yourself, but your family have to be completely on board. Yeah. So it's, yeah, that's all I got on that.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right. This one's kind of interesting. So Matt Nape, and you might actually, since, you know, you've been mentored to plenty of people, this might be interesting for you. What are some of the best channels for those who want to be future mentors? to maybe learn those attributes that make a great mentor. I think you were mentioning some books, right?
Yeah. So I was going to say you read a lot. So early on in your career, you're passive. So I call this the passive stage. And that's like, as you finish up your rotations and you're kind of getting into whatever setting you're going into, at that point, you're at the practice stage. So practice is where you start to refine your skill. After that is the active stage. And that is where you understand it completely. And if you can teach it, then you'll be a good mentor. It's not just that you can do it. It's doing it effectively and then turning it around and teaching somebody else that doesn't know how to do it. So that's pretty important. So, and then as you go through your progression professionally and personally, as you get more and more, blow up more and more birthday candles, what you do, you put less emphasis, though it is important on the clinical scale. You still refine your trade. But what you find is my progression has been 5 years of me working with my hands and my brain. My last 3 years has been being a leader. So becoming that leader, reading books about leadership. So I didn't feel like I was prepared because I needed to make sure that I could walk. Started to teach everything. And I do feel like there's a lot of people that are experts after 2 years of school. And it's, to me, it's a little frustrating because in this era where you can get information like that, but you don't truly absorb it and understand it, the analogy that I give, it's basically, you're just, if people are striving, let's say, to get board certified or a fellowship, what they care about, a lot of them, is a title. That's all they care about. So the analogy I give is it's like you're on a hike. And you're going up the mountain, and what you care about is the view to see scenery from below. The most beautiful scenery that you can see is on the trail, but you were too busy with your nose down just walking up the trail and not looking at anything because the only thing you cared about was the title and to show that you knew something. So the benefits of learning is just the process of learning. And to not be upset about that and be being patient and just knowing that this is a process and it will take time. So, and you know what? At the base of the mountain, that's probably the best scenery, you know, the more vegetation and flowers. So that is the ideal time to look at your setting and not put your nose down and just try to climb the mountain. So you gotta understand your trade before you're a mentor. Some people may feel more comfortable, but you know, to me, there are levels of mentor. And there's different areas of mentorship. I have a financial mentor. I have my parents are mentors to me. Yeah. There's a professional mentor. So there's so many different. It's just when you become one, you have to set an example and show credibility within your role.
That's awesome, man. That leads right into this next question. I really, really love the stuff you said at the very, very end of that and your analogy that kind of brought it home perfectly. So Key Pack asks, what are realistic expectations of a mentor? I want to help them make me great, but how much learning should be done on my own?
Well, there's mentorship and there's self-mentorship. Mentor at this disservice if you aren't sitting back and reflecting at your practice every day, stepping away and just reflecting on each patient early on, aware of your biases and making sure that you're not cutting corners, especially when you're early on in your career. So I would say you need to be very cognizant of that. And truly, we call it, I learned this from Tim, but through Phoenix Manual Therapy, intellectual honesty. So being critical and being okay to be wrong. So you should be doing that day in, day out.
Yeah.
Every day is a day to learn. And if you're not getting humbled by your patients every day, you're doing something wrong. You're not being critical on your test, retest. You're not really looking into care because man, every day you should be sat down and take a moment to breathe and say, man, I was wrong.
Yeah.
So every day is learning. So that's where the mentor wants to see. And the mentor, when they hear that, when they hear the examples, like Cruz, you call me and say, hey man, I did this and it changed and it was a great within session change and I can't believe I did that. Man, that fuels me. That's like, hell yeah, you are doing your own learning at this point. I'm not feeding you anything. I've given you a framework and come on, man, give me all your stories. I want to hear them.
That's good stuff. It reminds me of the have you seen, I'm sure you've seen it, the graph, where at the very beginning, as a new grad or even as a student, this, unconscious and incompetence, we don't know what we don't know, you know, and that I think is what is so amazing about having a mentor where I think I'm doing something right, or I have an idea of what I'm doing, but I really have no idea what is really going on. And so having someone know exactly that has been through those stages, that has seen what I've done and been through it themselves, be able to share a little bit and kind of widen, kind of open the aperture a little bit, man, that helps so much. And then as you move past that, the conscious incompetence and then the unconscious incompetence and all those other stages, I mean, it, as we progress, it's at each of those levels, it's great to have a mentor. And then like you mentioned, for different topics, right? So it could be manual therapy skills or clinical reasoning or finances or personal life or whatever it is. It's great. It's great. Yep. Any other thoughts there?
I mean, I'm unconsciously incompetent right now when it comes to sports science. So I'm currently doing a lot of reading. This is a new chapter of my life where, it's exciting. I become the student again. And you have to appreciate the learning process to actually get as much as you can. Because if you just want to get end results, you're going to mess up on a lot. And the mentor itself, he or she provides knowledge. And I would call that like the ultimate commodity when it comes to learning. You can't get that anywhere else.
It's
the practicality, the pragmatism of knowing how to refine your skill and become more efficient in your decisions instead of being so technical and algorithmic with your thinking process. The mentor will teach you how to become much more practical within your practice.
All right. So we just got another big dog asking a question. So Jeff Moore asked, you ready for this one? So, yeah. All right. So Jeff asks, Jesse, thoughts on virtual mentorship, an important part of the future, or watering down what we value? ? I battle with this question every day.
You know what? It's not a watering down effect if you have the right people. So just like with our opening the door for just virtual DPT programs, there needs to be a very strict standard that is established, because human nature is it'll start to slowly get less and less in regards to restrictions and standards. And then that is at a point where you start to lose the credibility, and then people will talk about how you got a DPT doctorate, you know, degree over the computer. So it's something I think if you go on for the top dollar, and it has to be even probably better than one-on-one, just because you don't want to have those negative connotations that are linked to it. It's much more of a option, because at this point, there's so many more people seeking out mentorship. And I think people are starting to understand that they're getting all this information and it's just too much. And they don't understand it anymore. They have all the coolest exercises, but don't know how the hell and why they're doing it. So that virtual counseling is going to be the next step. That is framework. That is the clinical reasoning component. Use your hands. The apprenticeship It's either self-taught by opening a book, being very intellectually honest, and just doing rep after rep after rep, and saying, "Hey, Cruz, I got Saturday open, and you want up from 2 to 3? Let's do this."
Yeah.
When I was doing it, I would write out a list of techniques that I did shitty in the clinic, and I'd call up Pierre Himmler, and I'd be like, "Hey, Pierre, what are we doing this weekend? This is the list that I want." He'd give me his list, and we just hang it out. And again, that's where it needs to get to that other level. But most why. So virtual mentorship can happen by teaching the why.
Yeah. That's so interesting, man. This idea of virtual mentorship, it makes me think about, as a DPT student growing up in the digital age, my professors were not the only people that were teaching me. You know, I was on social media. I was in virtual mentorship groups, in a bunch of different virtual vines, man, really trying to figure out exactly where my tribe was, who was thinking similar to me, who was going to challenge my beliefs. And it's so interesting because in school, we get, these foundational concepts, but the virtual groups, I think, is where you really find some important niches, but also where DPT school education is going. It's very interesting, these virtual programs now. And I don't think it's going to work for everyone because, to your point, you do need those manual portions as well, because we are a very hands-on profession, right? But I think virtual brings definitely some interesting thoughts where you can get a bunch of great minds together, and you don't need proximity anymore. So,
you can spread the word and get a better production of something. And
right.
If you're paying for virtual mentorship, I mean, you care. You want to get better. So, people that, hey, are in Dickinson, and don't have a mentor.
Yeah.
Right? Or Platte, South Dakota, where my friend Mark and I have done some fellowship training from here. Like, there are some remote areas where maybe you have all the mentors in the world, just don't have the time because you're
workout. Right, right. Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, for you, you're fellowship trained, so obviously your mentor or the individual that was looking over your cases wasn't always in the clinic with you. Obviously, you're doing your fellowship hours, but there had to have been some virtual time that you spent. So,
motion is very much virtual based.
Right.
Really good questions. People that hamper with your thought and staying honest with, great supplement of that and being in mentorship of evidence and motion. How the hell I got it, but good.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So we got a couple more minutes, man. I want to be mindful of your time. So I already took up a bunch of your time. So maybe two more questions. How does that sound?
I'm fine, man. I'm living in a hotel on my wife's.
Jess, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Sorry, what did you say? You cut out for a bit.
I just said Game of Thrones and Twin Peaks tonight. Those are the but we'll be
all right. So all right, quickly, here we go. So Megan asks if actually this is really interesting. It almost ties back into the virtual thing, but it'll be interesting. So if you are in a job position where you're the only PT on staff or work by yourself for the majority of the time, where is a good place to find a mentor outside of your workplace? I guess we probably just answered that. Any other thoughts? Jess, can you hear me okay? Uh-oh. is.
Was that me?
Hey, buddy. Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Good. All right, perfect. I can hear you, but I don't see you anymore. So were you able to
I didn't hear the question.
Okay. Sorry, man. So here it goes. If you're in a job position where you're the only PT on staff or work by yourself for the majority of the time, where is a good place to find your mentor outside of the workplace? I guess we kind of just answered that question, but any other thoughts on that?
No, I think you have to compensate for your barriers. So, for me, I mean, everyone has barriers in their situation.
Yeah.
Them as opportunity. So when you are, you know, restricted in certain ways, I look at different angles that you get. So that would be a lot of study. That would be, you know, what is important, but just as much as important to every day, reflect, or do things that is much. As a clinician.
Jess, can you hear me okay? Hey, boss, it looks like it sounds like you're breaking up just a little bit. I don't know if there's a way maybe you can move closer to your router or change something. Try talking again real quick. Sorry about that. Say something again.
Can you hear me?
Ah, yes, I can hear you now.
Okay.
Awesome. Let's
door.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
I can hear you a lot better now. I can't see you very well, but that's okay. As long as we have your voice, I think that's all that matters. We just need your brain. So let's see. What's a good way to find a mentor before graduating from school to help get advice on interview tactics, practice, salary negotiation, things to look for in an employer? And then I got one more for you at the very end.
Yeah.
Hey, boss, I can't hear you again, but sorry about that. It seems to be cut out all the way. Maybe if you try just completely cutting out your video, what would happen? All right. Sorry, everyone. Sorry for the technical difficulties here. Jess, can you hear me okay? Man. All right. Well, there we go. We got something different. Jess, can you hear me okay? All right, everyone. Thanks for your patience. Really appreciate that. We're going to see if we can try and get him back. If we can't here in the next 30 seconds, we will end it for the night. But it's been an amazing conversation. Jess, can you hear me okay? I can't hear you at all right now. All right. Well, all right, everyone, let's just cut it off right there. Thank you so much, and I apologize again for all of the technical difficulties. We're going to make sure that we really have this figured out for next month, so you won't see this again in the future. I hope you all gained quite a bit from tonight. Please keep the conversations going on Facebook and Twitter. Please let us know if you have any questions. And I will post information where you can find Jesse or reach out to him if you have any other questions. Maybe we can have him do a short video and then we can post it later on Twitter and social and other social media platforms. So thank you all for your time. Really, really, really appreciate that. Jesse, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, man, you're back. All right. You made it. Sorry about all that. Can you hear me?
So I heard the question. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but it's your video still cutting out a little bit.
Time at internet, so question and I'll leave you.
Yeah. Let's do the last one. We have a few more viewers, but I think this last one would be a really, really good way to just end it. What are your thoughts? Let's do it. All right. So this one comes from Brian. So Brian asks, looking back, what advice would you give yourself as a recent DPT graduate on how to grow as a professional? Who has been, actually, we already know that, who's been your most influential mentor? So looking back, any other advice?
Oh, man. So I could give you a lot of advice. Here's the one that I try to stress to anybody that comes out of school. You know a little, a lot. Now you talk about specialty. So we have an issue on our academia side where we don't have that step to say. What happens in and will do the techniques and the examination skills that, A, they learn in school, they learn from if the person is good or not. Because that's what you're going to do. So what happens is that have been effective many years, repetition to doing these things, you start doing them in the results.
Hey, Jess, can you hear me? All right, everyone. It looks like Jesse's having some more technical difficulties, so we will end it right there. Jesse, I apologize about all the technical difficulties, man. Thank you, everyone, for joining the chat tonight. We won't hold you up anymore. We'll let you guys all go out and watch Game of Thrones. have a great
Yeah, I wish.
Jess is back.
So I was getting at was you start to lose confidence because the things that you learned in school and the things that you learned from your CI, and it's because you're new and things get better with time. But I see a lot of people throw away the basics and they go and pursue other ways of thinking that I would consider almost outliers, where it really stresses and stretches the way that you should foundationally think, lose your practicality and your common sense of your standards. And what you do is you go into extremes because that's the new and most innovative thing. And you see a lot of people that then don't know the basics, and experts do the basics perfect. So I would really stress to stay true with the ship, stay true with, you know, being able to do the things that you learned in school and, you know, seek out the mentors that would do the same. I'm not going to say you should avoid, but anything that seems to be a little bit out there should not be your number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 course that you do early on. That is something you use later. That is a very specialized tool that hardly gets anything, any action, and it should have a lot of dust on it. You want to have the tools that are worn and that you can go to. And I think that's where we have a fallback on how people treat. And that's why I think there's a big discrepancy in how we treat patients, is the fact that we have a bunch of generalists that are learning on the job and haven't had the specialty training like a residency program, or at Phoenix Manual Therapy, we have a COMT program, which is a great way to get that hands-on and clinical reasoning education. So I think you should just really focus on the basics and avoid going to the extreme because you feel frustrated. And then again, kind of what we talked about, seek the people that you respect, seek the people that walk into a room and have a different presence than most PTs that you walk in and see. Those are your mentors. And you know, the bigger the ego of your mentor, the probability that he or she wants you to become them is very likelihood. There's a high likelihood. So you want a mentor that has a low ego, that expects them to be better than you, and that you have to do it your way.
Jess, man.
Yes, man.
Thank you. Thank you for everything.
Thank you. Sir. Thank you for everything.
Yeah.
This has been an incredible conversation, and I think it shows a perfect example of just your tenacity, your willingness to just never give up, not be denied, man. You keep coming in and out of this call to bring value to us. So seriously, man, thank you. Thank you for all of that. Thank you to everyone that joined the chat tonight and stuck with us. Jess, I will collect the titles of the books because we can't actually see your screen right now.
Here, from I'll you. I'll show them right now.
I don't think we can. Do you have your video up? Oh, there you go.
Okay. Number one.
He's alive.
Strength Finder. So very good professional tool. Tom Rath. Easy read. You find out what your strengths are, and it promotes promoting what you're good at, and all your weaknesses, put little less effort there and create a team or people around you that can improve you as a whole, as unity, versus trying to you're just going to focus on what you're really good at. Number two, this is a personal development and also understanding your patients. This is the Enneagram. I have this book. There's other books out there. I would recommend people to take an Enneagram to understand. It's a psychological test that's been done for hundreds and hundreds of years. It was created by, the Catholic Church. But it's very practical, and that's one of the big points for me is applicability and practicality. So you got nine types, and you can understand how to interact with patients and coworkers, to understand how to connect and also mentors. And the last one is Robert Greene, Mastery. This is a really good book too. And this is a good one on apprenticeship, mentorship, the learning process, the beauty of learning. So yeah, those are the three. You got a couple of psych tests and then a mentorship book.
That's awesome, man. Thank you. Thank you for that. Hey, before we end, how can people find you? Social media, whatever other contact info that you're willing to share in case they have questions for you.
Yeah, so I'm not very good at social media. So I'm Facebook, so just Jesse Ellis, add me. That's probably my most active vehicle at this point. Physio_Ellis for Instagram. And I believe Twitter, it's Jesse_Ellis.
You got it.
My personal email is jellis313@gmail.com. And yeah, please email me if you have any questions on mentorship or anything regarding just development as a clinician. Don't be afraid to reach out. I welcome it. And the reason why I have this urge to help is because I've gotten so much. So I don't want to be selfish. I need to spread the wealth myself. So reach out to me, connect with me. I'll probably answer Facebook before anything else for the social media.
Awesome. All right, man. Thank you to everyone for sticking with us. Thank you to Jesse. Join me in giving just a huge, massive round of applause to this guy. He never gives up. I've never known him to give up. So tonight again was an example of that. So have a good night, everyone. Thank you.
See you guys.